You're listening to the Yeshiva of Newark podcast. I'm your host and curator, Rabbi Avram Kivalevich, and I hope you enjoy this episode. With downloads approaching the million mark and an archival library numbering in the thousands, the Yeshiva of Newark podcast has been striving to continuously upgrade our content, professionalize our audio sound, along with altering approaches in light of much appreciated listener feedback. I firmly believe the niche has been carved out that resonates with many on the wide spectrum of observant Jews. This explains why we continually rank high in independent online lists of top yeshiva podcasts. That proud edifice is in real danger of toppling and disappearing. We need the help of our listeners to continue to record, and edit, to promote a product that has been a balm and instructor to so many. Just $36. As a minimum donation from 1,000 of you out there will keep us afloat as a Newark of straight, intelligent, humorous discussion, lectures, debate, and inquiry, while the destructive waters of ignorance and identity politics, cyberbullying, crash around us. Your generous contributions will seal and galvanize this ark till it comes to a satisfying rest in an era of Moyer Tzdeya, heralding Mashiach, B'mheira, B'yameinu, Amen.
And now, Emeritus Rex.
40 years of this is Emeritus Rex with Rabbi Reuven Yeshua Pupko. Before we get to news and views around the world, how do you expect this Purim to be different than last year?
Well, I can only speak for myself, but certainly Simchas Torah, when all of this started, Shmini Aseres and Simchas Torah, I don't think any of us imagined that we'd still be in the middle of a war on Purim. Maybe some people did. And I'm not saying it's taking too long. I just didn't think it would take this long. I mean, it's, obviously Simchas Torah's atmosphere was certainly profoundly dampened. I believe that Purim will be celebrated with a nagging feeling of sadness and ambivalence. I believe most families will do things almost normally because, for the children, to have Simchas Purim, it's important to demonstrate the continuity of normal Jewish life, even in the midst of conflict. So I think it'll go normally. I think what's going to be different is our headspace. That's all. We're going to be celebrating, understanding that there are too many families in Israel suffering personal despair and the country still remains deeply saddened by October 7th and the subsequent losses in war.
Yeah, I would have thought that there might be a call for people to cut back on expenses in terms of what they would spend on Mishloach Monos and in terms of the lavishness of their meals. In Purim itself, it lends itself to excesses. And some of that money, a lot of that money, can be funneled, whether it's Akim and Matanos Levyonim exactly or not. Clearly, there are so many places where monies can be given in Eretz Yisrael, whether it has to do with, as you said, to families that have suffered losses, families emotionally and physically. I know that as well-intentioned and dedicated and as expertly as the doctors are in Eretz Yisrael, there's still a lot of room for help, especially for those that have been wounded and injured.
Well, there's a lot of need for help for people who still remain, displaced from their homes in the north and in the south. There's a lot of need. They're getting help, but obviously more is always welcome. We're in the middle of a terrible chapter. We don't yet know how this will end. We don't know what the long-term repercussions will be. What we do know, sadly, this Shabbos is Parsha Zohar, is that we have a lot more to remember this year. The list of things we need to remember has grown longer, sadly. The losses, the barbarism of October 7th, there's a lot more to remember. And what we also know is that we remember the historical condition of the Jew, which is a very lonely one at times. And it's hard today not to feel lonely. Yes, we have supporters. Yes, we're not completely alone. But we, in many arenas, we feel increasingly isolated. Kids on campus certainly feel isolated. In the political arena, and different countries were feeling increasingly under siege. When you see the demonstrations in the streets, it's certainly hard not to feel isolated and put upon. When you're scrolling on Instagram, and it's hard not to feel alone. So Purim in some ways is an antidote to that. We come together to remember that the challenges of the past have come and gone, and this challenge will again, Gamzeh Ya'avor, it'll one day be over. But it is a painful reminder of the historical condition of the Jew, which is too often a very lonely one and an embattled one. And I don't want to overstate it. I don't want to, speak with despair, because in many ways we're still enjoying the greatest moment in Jewish history, and since the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash. I mean, we have a land of Israel that is flourishing and thriving. We have Torah that's flourishing and thriving, and we have the ability to defend ourselves in ways we haven't had since Bayis Sheni. We have a greater percentage of the Jewish people living in Israel than any time since Bayis Rishon. So it's a remarkable moment in Jewish history in a positive way. But, since October 7th, we've been reminded, in ways which we would have preferred not to have been, we've been reminded of what, Jewish history tends to look like at times.
I just warn people against making facile and inaccurate connections between the war against Amalek and the war against Hamas. In many ways, what was on display October 7th was the type of barbarism that Chazal ascribed to Amalek. On the other hand, I think if what this is going to be is, once again, we have our Amalek, once again, we have to take up arms. I don't know. I think those are facile and superficial connections.
The one connection I do see, which I think is legitimate, is that the attack in that we read about on Parsha Zohar, the attack of Amalek on the Jewish people, was not an attack that would in any way benefit Amalek. It was not even the intent. An intent. There was no strategic gain, right? It was simply an attack to destroy. Israel had no territory at the time. There was nothing in it for them, except doing harm. And right now, Israel faces an enemy that seems singularly unconcerned about what would be best for their own future, and seems singularly focused only on hurting the Jewish state and the Jewish people. There is nothing, this is nothing for them to gain from this conflict or from October 7th, nothing to be gained other than harming the Jewish people.
Yeah, which really aligns with what Rav Soloveitchik used to say, that Amalek is about Jew hatred, even if it means their own self-immolation, that they will try to destroy the Jew even if it actually ruins them. And this is what, of course, was on display in the Holocaust in many ways, where Germany funneled so many services and goods and monies towards the death camps, when, of course, they could have been used to stave off the Allied response to them. This is where the hatred isn't about territory. It isn't about what they're going to gain. It's really because they want to destroy. Look, there's definitely people who will disagree with what we're saying here based on, I guess, what they call the big picture. But I was heartened by the fact that in Illinois, just where, of course, I spent 20 years, there was a pushback against anti-Israel candidates. And in the Illinois elections, a number of at least what we would call pro-Israel candidates emerged victorious, even in that area. So there has been...
The problem we have now is that we do enjoy support of the broad mainstream of American life, but those who have their loudest voices in the cultural arena, in the media arena, in universities, seem to be, perversely and obsessively focused on propagating hate and lies about Israel. And, what you can't have a cultural event anywhere in Europe or America today, it seems, without this issue being raised, where there's a participant who who was, you know, who's a Zionist, and the whole event is you know, is condemned, and whether it's in museums, whether it's music festivals, whether it's literary gatherings, you know, there's too many to mention. And on campuses, we know the situation, and we know that those who have their hands on the levers of the culture are not our friends. And although they are a minority, they do seem to have voices that dominate many conversations. And what's going on with the American administration today, seems to want to mollify those voices, both symbolically and substantively, it doesn't portend well for the next few months, where Israel seems to be fully committed to going to Rafah in ways that the Americans are going to criticize.
You know, you mentioned America. Why don't we say, call it North America and include Canada? Because your guys over there where you live have been even worse than the Biden administration.
You know, what happened this week at the Canadian Parliament, Jews feel bitterly betrayed by the Liberal government. The NDP, the extreme left party, proposed a non-binding resolution that called for an immediate recognition of a Palestinian state and a host of other things. So what happened was they got rid of that in a last minute amendment. They got rid of the call to immediately recognize the Palestinian state, but the other stuff is still in there. They're cutting off weapon shipments to Israel. I'm not sure what Canada sends to Israel. Maybe parkas. I don't know. I mean, it's not like.
Yeah, you listen, never sell the Canucks short. I'm sure they've developed some sort of zip gun,
you know,
or something.
And it was, it talked about ceasefires. And it condemned Hamas, but it was a very, unbalanced resolution condemning Israel. And the anger in the Jewish community against this Liberal government has never been more intense. Liberal members of parliament are thinking of abandoning the party. It's a bad situation right now in Canada. This coming Tuesday night, the leader of the Conservative Party, Pierre Poilievre, who was very pro-Israel, will actually be in my synagogue for a community event. And people are very eager to attend and show support.
Like I said, it's a mixed bag here in the U.S. You know, we are much more sprawling in certain ways than you guys up in Canada. But as you mentioned before, the American administration has been sending much more than mixed signals. You probably need to go very deep in American history to find so much comments and resolutions and statements by U.S. officials about what's happening in a foreign war. Especially one where, America doesn't have troops, it doesn't have people involved. The Israeli delegation is coming to Washington to talk about alternate plans to the invasion of Rafah. Isn't this mamish, I think, off the wall?
It is breathtakingly unprecedented for the American government to get involved in the nitty-gritty of war planning of a foreign country and critiquing tactics. There's no parallel for it in any other conflict. You're absolutely right. I mean, America intervened in Bosnia, wasn't that, and yet politically they weren't that engaged.
I mentioned on this platform, even the amount of space that Biden gave to the conflict in the State of the Union address and in his MSN interview, which was extremely critical. Let's even talk about the great Shomer Yisrael, Chuck Schumer. Giving a speech, I guess it was, calling for immediate elections in Israel. Right? These things are really, really, head turning.
Listen, a lot of people interpreted Chuck Schumer's speech as belated revenge for Bibi's speech when Obama was president, when he went to Congress and spoke against the Iran deal. And I wouldn't discount that theory, by the way. It's hard for non-politicians to understand how fiercely partisan politicians are. And Bibi coming to Congress that time and attacking what they saw as an attack on a Democratic president, that's something they will never forgive. The Democrats will never forgive that. They are obsessed with undermining Bibi, obsessed.
I think it strengthens Bibi at home, doesn't it? It makes Bibi...
That's what people are saying, is that Biden attacking BB helps Biden in Michigan and some other places, and BB attacking Biden helps BB in Israel. And that all of this may be, you know, not so overtly choreographed to help each of them with their political problems. Listen, replacing BB won't change anything right now in the context of the war. People are highly and legitimately critical of BB, you know, before, you know, of what happened on October 7th. But in the management of the war, if anything, BB is more moderate than the population at this moment. The population is more right-wing than BB on these issues. Everyone is committed. 80% or so of Israelis in polling say they need to, you know, Israeli army should finish the job in Rafah.
Although there does seem to be a winning trajectory that you could trace. They had to go back to the Shifa hospital a couple of days ago.
Yeah, that was disheartening to wake up that morning and to hear that the Israelis are back there where they had cleaned it out months ago.
That's right.
It was disheartening. I mean, part of the problem is that the deployment of Israeli soldiers in Gaza is down dramatically from its peak. It's down 80% from its peak. Only 20% of the soldiers that were there at the peak are still there, which has allowed, you know, a bad actors to return to the north. And Biden is using that as proof that Israel isn't managing Gaza in a way that will be successful.
I think part of what was going on was that the, as you say, the hospital was cleared out, but then, you know, wearing costumes and you know, going in ambulances, a group of, you know, Hamas commandos went back to Shifa.
The Hamas guys, one of them interrogated, basically said, we thought we could hide there because Israelis thought it was cleaned out already, you know? And where do they go back? To a hospital. I mean, it's lunacy here. Listen, Hamas benefits enormously from their alleged claim about civilian, their claims about civilian casualties and about everything else. This is, I mean, what other war is it where a combatant wants civilian casualties? Hamas wants the numbers of civilians dead, you know, who are killed to go up. They use this as a weapon against it. What Sinwar is thinking as he's sitting in his bunker in Rafah is that I just have to sit back, hold out, survive, and eventually international and American pressure will be such that Israel will have to capitulate on its goal, on its intentions, and all of those other things. That the pressure from the Israeli street as it relates to the hostages will also increase pressure on BB. If Sinwar thinks he can, we can sit with his arms folded and wait it out.
You know, as you say, the international condemnation and calls for ceasefire and claims of outright genocide being practiced by Tzahal, and not only now, but of course it's been ascribed that this has been Tzahal's motif for years. And this is, of course, this is really the Arab description of what they call the terrible occupation, which leads me to something that happened a couple of weeks ago. I know that both of us sometimes talk about, you know, I guess, midbrow culture or media culture. And let's talk about Jonathan Glazer's, you know, stammered speech at the Oscars, where he talked about, he refuted that Jewishness and the Holocaust were being hijacked, that the state of Israel was using Jewishness, the Jewish identity, which Glazer has as well, and the Holocaust, which Glazer said he has, of course, you know, created this award-winning film for, and they have been used by Israel to justify this terrible occupation that people are dying.
So subsequent to that, the other people on the stage with him severely criticized what he did. 450 Hollywood personalities wrote a letter condemning it. It was in Variety magazine yesterday. Between Glazer and Schumer and all of those people who the only time in their life they use the expression as a Jew is when they criticize the state of Israel. As a Jew, they do nothing else. They do nothing else as a Jew. But as a Jew, they bash the state of Israel, undermine the state of Israel, embolden our adversaries. And it's very ugly. And we've had treasonous Jews in the past. We have them today. We'll have them in the future. They are all left in the dustbin of history without having any lasting impact, as certainly is the destiny of these people today. But it is certainly disheartening and infuriating.
Yeah, well, you know, I would sort of, you know, connect it to where we started today when we talked about how Purim shakes the and rattles the memory, especially of the of recent times and of the Holocaust. You know, Glaser, you know, assumes that since he directed and pushed forward this film, which he talked about in terms of allowing yourself to blank out the suffering of others, sort of interest, the Shoah mentality as the be-all, end-all of Judaism, you know, I think needs to be punctured. And again, I say this as someone who lost grandparents and aunts and uncles and never got to know them because of the Holocaust. But I think when your Judaism, you know, Glaser's Judaism, I don't know if it's Chuck Schumer's as well, is fashioned and basically totally informed by the Holocaust experience, it doesn't have any room for true loyalty to Jewish life and what we call Torah mitzvahs. That's for sure true.
In two ways. Number one, it depends what you learn from the Holocaust. If you learn from the Holocaust that the Jewish people need to have their destiny in their own hands, they can never rely on the mercies of others, that's a lesson that's valuable, and Jews need to continually learn and remember. You know, that's okay. But if your lesson of the Holocaust is, you know, you know, tikkun olam and that amorphous, universalism with any specific Jewish obligation or ties, then it's a disaster. I would also answer you with the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar. The Pirkei Rabbi Elazar asks, there are two psukim, Zechores Asher Asah L'cha L'Amalek and Zechores Yom HaShabbos L'Kadshei. And the Medrash asks, Eich Yiskayim U'Shteim, how can you do both? A question nobody, no Jew that I know has ever asked. Right? Remember Shabbos, remember Amalek. How do you do both? And what they're asking is your question. That means if you're going to allow Amalek, the memory of Amalek, to dominate, there's no room for Yiddishkeit. Right? So the Medrash answer is, of course, remembering Shabbos is more important than remembering Amalek. What the Medrash puts in the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar is that a Kai Shel Yayin Konditin is more important than a Kai Shel Chaimetz, meaning Amalek. And that's what we have to do. We have to remember Zechores Yom HaShabbos, the Kadshai always takes priority over Zechores Asher Asah L'cha Amalek. And for the Jews for whom it's only Amalek and not Shabbos, they will end up with a very twisted view of Judaism and of the world.
Right, which I would say is, therefore, it's Glaser and his cohorts that have really hijacked Judaism. And right. I wouldn't say they hijacked the Holocaust. I would say that they were obsessed to the point that they don't see the complete picture, the hand of God or anything. It's always about man's inhumanity to man. But by the way, we should just also mention the fact that in Glaser's film, which I don't plan on seeing, I don't know if you did, there is no Jews. Basically, it's all about you can only hear the screams and sounds from the concentration camp where—
The movie is well done. I don't have a problem with the movie. I mean, it's, the movie had a specific focus, which was fascinating, which was the life of the Nazis who lived, you know, on the grounds adjacent to Auschwitz, and to see how the moral callousness of their lives. It was an important movie, but what he did at the Oscars itself was egregious, terrible.
You feel the film should be seen. It shouldn't be boycotted by Jews.
I don't boycott movie. I don't know what that even means. What does that mean, boycott?
Well,
movie?
Again, you know, boycotting would mean, you know, because especially if you have to go to an event
movie
where you're—
or Mel Gibson movies, you know? I mean, that's the only thing I would,
Switching, gears, I cannot see Mel Gibson in anything anymore. Lethal Weapon was definitely funny, right?
Yeah, love Lethal Weapon.
But you can't watch it anymore.
The hardest movie to boycott, though, is his Braveheart. You know,
Well, again, that is a inspiring film. I would say, I have an easier time watching Vanessa Redgrave than Mel Gibson. Although Vanessa Redgrave was this staunch Palestinian supporter.
She was horrific. Chaleria. Yeah.
Yes, right. But Gibson, like, he felt what he needed to not only, tirade against the Jews, but, what was the name of his movie? The Passion of the Christ? Was that his movie?
Yeah, yeah. Passion of the Christ, yeah. I saw that. You ever see that movie? It's a great movie.
You liked it?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, it was a horribly anti-Semitic film. In other words, to see the anti-Semitism in that movie, you have to know a little bit. Like, to the casual observer, I don't think they would pick up on it necessarily. But if you know anything about, you know, how they see the world and you know, the New Testament stuff and, you know, in Christian history a little bit, it's highly offensive. It's highly anti-Semitic. But I enjoyed it nonetheless. I mean,
Let's end with one of our favorite topics. You know, as I traveled recently through Ohio and Pennsylvania, I did notice some Trump signs and Trump support. And does anybody really register the crazy things that Trump is still saying? I mean, does anybody really care?
The Democrats are desperately working to get Trump elected. I mean, that's what it looks like. I mean, listen, we're not going to regurgitate everything we've already said 100 times, but has someone told you this would be the, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, that this is what an election in 2024 would look like? You would dismiss them as lunatics. And the reality is we're in a situation where neither candidate is what people would prefer.
Sure. It does seem, as we say, as we come into Purim, look, if you're going to be wearing a Trump or Biden costume, make sure that you have a walker if you have the Biden costume, and make sure that your toupee seems to be falling off your head if you are wearing your Trump costume. Take care, everybody. Have a wonderful Purim. Be well.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please take a moment to share this or any of the many episodes available on our platform with friends in order to help grow our community. Until next time, Shalom.